Adinashulakaya, Saksu Sumiratanjena, Tasmai, Sri Gurudevinama, Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu, Stapitam Jena Bhutale, Sayam Rupakada,
Ransakokatavishcha,
Pisanubhayabhishcha, Pratitinam Pavanebhyobhishcha. Could you make it a little bit lighter, I would say, if it's easy to do. Hare Krishna, thank you for coming on a cold night. Krishna willing.
I wish I got warm.
By some Krishna Katha. This section of Kunti Devi's prayers that we're reading is obviously a continuation of what we were reading before. Our prayers go on, and up until this point, first Kunti Devi offered her obeisances to Krishna, who was standing right before her. Because for souls less fortunate than Kunti Devi, Krishna can seem very far away or abstract or vague. But for Kunti and other great devotees, Krishna, talking to Krishna is as real as we talk to each other, just as concrete and real as if we talk to another, a person, addressing a person. So Kunti Devi first explain that this person, although he is a person, he cannot be perceived by the senses, by one's own ability or by one's intelligence. One cannot understand Krishna's position as the unlimited Supreme Lord by one's own intelligence. But he is achieved. He can be seen. He can be known through a process, because he's unknowable to the material mind, intelligence, and senses. It doesn't mean that he's unknowable, that it's not possible for anyone to know him, that he's beyond the capacity to be known. He is known, he is knowable, but there is a process to make him to perceive him. And that process is not to use our own ability. We do use our own ability. It is necessary to use our own ability, but it is insufficient. There has to be some extra help. And that extra help is bhakti, which what does bhakti mean? It means devotion to Krishna. Devotional, not only devotion, not only a feeling, a sentiment, but that the manifestation of that feeling and sentiment in service. Devotional service was always how Srila Prabhupada translated bhakti yoga, the way of connecting to Krishna through devotional service. Serving Krishna, but not just working for Krishna, like one has a job and one works in one's job, but one has no devotion either for the boss or for the, generally for the cause. One is, where have you been? You're 4 minutes late. Do you always come 4 minutes late for class? Or just this one time? It's somewhat of a trick question, but I'll leave it at that. But thank you for coming, because I know you're very busy also. And so Krishna can be known, but the process of knowing him, Hare Krishna, is different from the process that we know so many things of the material world, because Krishna is not of the material world naturally. It is obvious that he's not of the material world, because he is the creator of the material world. How can the creator be of the same substance of the thing that he created? If he created all matter, if he existed before matter existed, then he's non-material. So then the question comes, Kunti Devi thanks Krishna for him having saved herself and her sons, the Pandavas, from so many
different difficult situations.
Very difficult situation. And then she explains that now we are in a different kind of situation. We've won the battle of Kurukshetra, and my son Yudhisthira is the king. But now you're leaving. You're leaving us who are in Hastinapur and going to Dwarka. So this is somewhat
What she's going to say next
is somewhat the opposite of the way most of us tend to think, or a conditioned soul will always think. When we use the term conditioned soul, what do we mean? Well, it's a real ISKCON terminology, something, some ISKCON jargon almost, technical term. What do we mean by when we say a conditioned soul?
Soul is full of anartis?
No. Yes, a conditioned soul must be full of anartis. But what is specifically the word conditioned soul mean? What does it mean? Have you ever heard that expression before?
Yeah. What does it mean, though?
He's put under material circumstances.
Yeah, he's put under material circumstances, and those circumstances control him. They condition the way he reacts and acts. They control him. They force him to act in... They change him from his actual position, his consciousness. They change his consciousness and force him to act in ways that are actually foreign to him. And the conditioning agent is Maya in the form of the three modes of material nature. And what causes... Now we'll start getting even more to the point. What causes a soul to become conditioned? Not asking the question, where does he originally emanate from, but asking the question, what is it that combines him with the conditioning
elements of the material energy, Maya,
and the three modes of material nature? What is that causes him to become entangled like a fly in a spider web? And it's so hard to get out of a web. The only way I can see Brez Mohan is if you raise your right hand. Brez Mohan, could you sit a little bit? Because, of course, how can I not see you and still be simultaneously happy? So what causes the conditioning of a soul, or the soul to be controlled?
Is it desire?
Yes, and what specific kind of desire is it? Now that one doesn't hear very often. I don't know. What causes the soul to get entangled in the material energy? Desire, definitely desire. But what kind of desire?
Lust.
Yes, lust, which is a form, kam, of selfish desire with myself in the center. In other words, turning one back on Krishna. Sorry, Yadu, I call on everyone under 15 first. But the answer the questions. How old are you? Okay, you're still in the call on age. Well, there's one more, right? A bigger size. Did you play basketball today? So it is desire. It's desire, selfish desire. I want to enjoy. There's one verse in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Purusha Prakriti Stohi. The soul thinking of himself as an enjoyer, although he's not an enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer. He is called Lila Purushottama, which means that he performs these activities. Everything in existence is actually meant for his enjoyment, spiritually, especially in the spiritual world and in the material world. He is the Purusha, the enjoyer, but we think ourselves in that way. We are situated in the material energy, bungde prakti janiya, and we desire to enjoy those things made of the material energy. We see the material world as if it is meant for me and my pleasure. And in that way, we separate in our consciousness the things of the material world from the cause of the things of the material world, Krishna. And that is called Maya, or illusion. That energy that causes us to see things as separate from Krishna and meant for Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's energy meant for Krishna's pleasure. So what does Maya mean? I don't know. Okay. Can't say that all the time, bro. What is Maya? Maya means that energy of Krishna that causes us to see the material world or anything as if separate from Krishna and is meant for our pleasure. So there's a particular consciousness that Maya causes within us, which is based on our desire. And if we didn't have a desire to enjoy the material world, Maya could not touch us. One time someone said, that, well, Prabhupada said, Maya is not strong. You are weak. But at another time he said, the problem with you boys and girls is you don't fear Maya. So on one side, we should know that we are weak in relationship to Maya, because that tendency, Maya... You have a question? Should we wait till I finish my sentence, or do you want to ask it right now? Mm-hmm. Which one?
First one.
Can I have two sentences sometimes? Okay. Okay. So our, because Maya is so powerful, because we are weak, because that desire, the tendency to want to enjoy the things of the material world is so strong within us that we would have to say opposition to Krishna is so strong within us. We don't want to serve Krishna, but rather we would rather enjoy the things of the material world. That is so strong with us that Maya just places a little bit of bait on the hook of our desire to enjoy, and we... And what happens when you bite the hook? Are there any experienced fish in the room? What happens when you bite the hook? Well, anyway, I don't... It hurts. You want to enjoy, so you bite the hook and you get caught. It's such a terrible thing. Such a terrible thing. Just, don't imagine it, but the fish, and then they pull him up by his mouth. It's a terrible thing. It's a cruel thing. And you know what they say? They say, oh, it doesn't hurt him. Because the part of the brain that causes pain, he doesn't have yet. Because he's only a fish. And then you ask them, but why does he really pull the opposite way and struggle to get away from it if he doesn't feel any pain or he's not in fear? And they say, well, that's just instinct. I don't believe them, personally.
You can believe them if you want, but I don't believe them. The fish...
He's thinking, oh, how wonderful it is that he's pulling me in by my mouth. This is so nice. And then when he beats me with a stick, oh, it's great. Wow. Better than bubblegum.
So,
Krishna, so there's enjoyment on one side, or the absence of misery, and on the other side is Krishna's association. So the point that Kunti Devi makes is something quite astounding, that I prefer to be in difficulty, like we were in difficulty in the forest, than to be free from difficulty but be without you. I would prefer to be with you over anything. Now that is devotion. That is love. That is devotional service. That is bhakti. That is Krishna consciousness. It means that I have so much love for Krishna. To be with him in any circumstance is ecstasy. And that's what we hear about in Vrindavan, the residents in Vrindavan. They're always so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna that whatever the circumstances, even when Krishna's not even... physically present, we'll say physically present, but if he's not present before their eyes, they're thinking about him so deeply that they're experiencing ecstasy. No matter what happens, whether an asura, a demon attacks, or whether it's raining, or whether it's cold, or whether there's a storm, or whether... It doesn't make a difference, because they're always so deeply attached to Krishna, he's always with them. And that is their happiness. And a moment, the only fearful thing for them, just, we should understand what bhakti is, what devotion is, what being a devotee is. The only fearful thing for them is if Krishna is not with them. And Mahaprabhu taught how to be a devotee in this way. That was his teaching. So Kunti Devi, on her own exalted level, was saying, I would much rather be in difficulty with you present than to be in the position of the Queen Mother without you present. So this is the standard that defines devotion, being a devotee. So this is very, very wonderful. So therefore, if one reads, sometimes devotees ask, how do I become humble?
all one has to do is understand what being a devotee is, and one becomes humble. Or the other way that one becomes humble is go through life. It's guaranteed to make you humble. Yeah. Yes, Brajmohan.
One of Krishna's energies, so how come we have to surrender to Krishna, not to Maya?
Maya is one of Krishna's energies. So why can't we just surrender to Maya? And it's the same thing as surrendering to Krishna. That's basically your question. Yes? I also asked Prabhupada that question, but in a little different form. I said, I was also trying to be clever. Trying to get Prabhupada to say, yes, it's the same, you can just surrender to Maya. I said to Prabhupada, this was in Montreal, in Canada. You know where Montreal is?
I have heard of it a lot.
Do you know where it is?
No.
No, okay, just wanted to know. Raj, after you teach them how to say, I don't know. It's in Canada, in the province known as Quebec or Quebec, if you pronounce it in the way that they do pronounce it. So I said to Prabhupada, if Maya is one of Krishna's energies, and we have to surrender to Krishna either directly or indirectly, we either surrender to him directly or through his energy, either way we're surrendering to Krishna. It's very similar to your question. So why surrender directly? Because either way I'm surrendering to Krishna, so why surrender directly? Why can't I just surrender to Maya? I was so clever. And you know what he said? You do know? Oh. He said, if you surrender to Krishna directly, you'll be happy. And if you surrender indirectly, you'll be unhappy. And there's an example that we know that the government, we'll make it simple, has two different energies. We'll say the government has one energy where the people who don't follow the law are forced to follow the law, and that energy is known as the prison house. The government supports the prison house. It's run by the government. It's the same energy. The same power is behind it. And the free citizens, they're also following the law of the government. So if you're going to have to follow the law of the government, this is what the question is like, can I also break the law and follow it by being in the prison? And the answer is, of course you can if you want to, but you won't be happy because they force you to do everything you have to. They force, so much force. There's no freedom, and the soul loves freedom. Freedom to serve. Very good question. I mean, as much as my question was a good question, your question is a good question. So that was this Kunti Devi's mood. She was so much a lover of Krishna that to be with Krishna was everything for her. She'd sacrificed the kingdom for a second, and by the end of this, her prayers, she even makes more radical statements, but we won't tell you what they are right now, just expressing her love for Krishna. So then she explains that those who are materially self-satisfied, what does materially self-satisfied mean? Because we usually say that you can't be self-satisfied if you're materially, but what is materially?
You've got a situation sorted out, you've got a reasonable job and a reasonable house and a reasonable car and a reasonable income.
And a reasonable intoxication and your footy team is reasonably winning most of the time.
And your health's reasonable. Your marriage is reasonable, your kids are reasonable.
What country is this going on in? And you're not in anxiety.
Too much anxiety. Yeah.
I would give it a different definition. Whatever is happening to you, you're satisfied with it on the material level. But no one's satisfied. Your definition is good too. What does it mean to be materially satisfied? All your desires are on the material level. Even if you're not satisfied, you think the solution to your dissatisfaction is on the material level too. just having more of this or less of that. What would be an example of something a materialistic person wants more of?
Money.
I thought of that one too. And what would be an example of what a materialistic person wants less of?
Anxiety.
Stress, anxiety, debt.
Disease,
examinations in school. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to say that anything. But it's all that we think that the solution to our problem, say existential problem, the problem of our ontological existence, is to be solved on the material level. And Kunti Devi says it's not possible. But you are actually the property. You are owned by, you are controlled by you, Krishna, who is all powerful, are controlled by those who are akinchana, Swamakinchana Gotara. You are controlled and owned. You are the property of those who don't... they may deal with the material world like anything, is the example of our Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But they don't have a shelter and a hope that the material realm can afford one satisfaction. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has also said that for one who has come to the conclusion on the deepest level that no situation in the material world can actually make me happy, that person has taken the greatest step forward in his spiritual life. It sounds so nice, yeah? But then when you turn that light backwards on you, not on you, but on me, it doesn't... That's what I say. It makes us humble. Humble means... What does humility mean, since we're asking definitions today? How old are you? But you used to be young. Okay.
Opposite of proud?
Yes. Okay. Yes, the definition. Vyatare, definition by opposite. Yes, correct. So, the absence of pride. And what does pride mean?
Well, you think you're all of that.
You're all...
All of that.
All that what?
All that great.
All that great.
All important.
All important. Well, how about, here's a definition of proud. You think you are more than you actually are. So then we'd have to ask the question, well, to be proud and think you are more than you actually are, you'd have to know what you actually are. And what are we actually? What are you actually?
So...
A soul, yes. And how big is a soul? Quite small. I mean...
Very small.
Very small. Like 1/10,000th. If you take of a tip of a hair, not the long way, but the tip of the hair, divide it in how many parts?
10,000.
Well, so it's 1,000 and it's 100 and then 100 and you get 10,000. So small. Immeasurably small, practically speaking. So, and we also often use the word insignificant. So tiny and insignificant. Who feels themselves tiny and insignificant? Oh. Okay, three. Very... Yeah. And completely dependent. Yeah, also. Yeah. But no one goes to... They don't teach you that in school, do they? How to become tiny and insignificant. They teach you just the opposite. The material world builds us. You can do it. You can do it. I can do it. I can do what? Be tiny and insignificant? Even we can't do that by our own power. Let's try to say, from now on I'm going to be humble. And not be proud anymore. That doesn't work either. We can't even become humble by our own power. So humility doesn't mean thinking oneself very, very, very bad and thinking about how terrible one is. That's not what humility is. But actually humility means that accepting that I am Krishna's servant. So when we think that we're bad, we take shelter of Krishna. When we see our faults, we take shelter of Krishna and depend on him, go through devaranam tata. That's called surrender. Not to think all the time of how bad I am. That's not what humility is. Humility means to take shelter of Krishna, to accept that I'm his servant, insignificant servant. So Kunti Devi, is explaining that we can't be happy on the material level, but we can be happy when we accept who we actually are. Krishnas, we are Krishnas. And the wonderful thing Shilajiva Goswami explains in Sri Bhakti Siddhava about accepting that I am Krishnas, then what naturally flows from that consciousness is the feeling and understanding that that Krishna is mine. That is the gift that comes along with understanding that I am Krishna, that naturally we feel under the protection of Krishna. And therefore the people in the world who are not surrendered to Krishna, they always feel so frightened because they're unprotected, ultimately unprotected. People bluff and say, oh, I'm so powerful and I will take care of this and take care of that, but it's just a bluff. Everyone inside knows that we are insignificant. And just some little bug comes along, gets in our body, and what happens, as we have experienced last week? We have no energy, we can't do anything, little tiny insignificant bug. So then Kunti Devi explains that this all-powerful Supreme Lord, who, it's so wonderful, the only important thing in existence is to be with him. It's so bewildering, because here he is, right in front of her, she says, right up in the material world. And then she explains, it's inconceivable, your position in the material world, because even though you're in the material world and standing right in front of me, you are not of the material world at all. Your pastimes and activities, they're inconceivable. They're inconceivable. That means the insignificant soul can only have insignificant intelligence, and that insignificant intelligence cannot conceive of the all-powerful acting in the world. He's acting as the chariot driver of Arjuna. He's driving the chariot. He's serving his devotee. He's driving the chariot. He's not acting as a warrior even, because the driver is the assistant, the servant, what's the person who drives the chariot? Driver, is that what you call it? The what?
Sarathi.
Yeah, but how do you translate that into English?
Charioteer.
I thought that's what chariots cry. It's charioteers. There's cultural fusion there. So he's serving. So the driver, so he was just serving. In English, the one who's driving the car for the master is called the chauffeur. He's just a servant, a driver. In India, they say, he's my driver. He's a servant. And Krishna was taking that position. And whatever position Krishna takes, whatever he does, it's completely beyond the material energy, because he's the controller of the energy, material energy. And there he is doing these amazing things, like stealing butter in Vrindavan. And what else? What other amazing things that he does in Vrindavan?
Kills massive demons.
He kills demons. Yes. He lifts the hill. But it's things that just seem ordinary. He plays with his cowherd boyfriends. He plays a flute. He herds cows. He eats. Huh?
Dirt.
He what?
Dirt.
Eats dirt. Do you eat dirt? Oh, that's good. Do you eat dirt?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. You shouldn't eat dirt.
All the food comes from dirt.
That's what Mahaprabhu said when his mother chastised him for saying that. But we won't chastise him.
I also went into the poisonous water.
But do you eat dirt? That's the question. Good. You should stop eating dirt, okay? You should eat food in the right form. So So Krishna is acting in these ways, but it has nothing to do with the activities of an ordinary man if he would act in a similar way. When Krishna eats dirt, it's the what's impelling him to eat dirt, what's pushing him to eat dirt, what's causing him to eat dirt is completely different than if I were to eat dirt. Or if Krishna's playing with his cowherd, with his friends, it's completely different. Although it looks exactly the same, it's completely different. Because Krishna is not under the three driving forces of the material world, the three modes of material nature. He's doing things motivated by his own desire to enjoy with his devotees. He's never hungry. He's never hungry, but yet he eats. And he cries when he's not eating, but he's not hungry. Completely different. So what causes Krishna to come to the material world? So now, in the verse that we're going to read today, and maybe we'll even read two, there's different opinions. So we actually started this section, why Krishna comes to the material world, in the last class that we had so long ago. So one of the unborn is being born, takes his birth. He's eternal, and yet he takes his birth. So the first reason was that we read last time. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. He glorifies pious kings such as Maharaj Yudhisthira just by his appearance. And he appears, what is the meaning of this? He appears to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. So what is that example? Just as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills, you appear to glorify King Yadu in his dynasty. What is the meaning of that?
The sandalwood trees don't actually belong to the Malaya hills. The Malaya hills have become famous because of the fact that sandalwood grows there.
So similarly,
King Yadu has become famous because Krishna has appeared in his
life. Yes, exactly. Thank you. So to make your great devotee, Yadu, famous, you have done this, you've come. This is a reason that some people say. Now here's the what we'll speak about today. Apare vasudevasya. Devakyam yachito abhyagat. Ajastvamasya ce maya. Vadhaya ca suradvisham. So others say, apare means others, that because of yachite means prayers. Because of the prayers of your devotees, Vasudev and Devaki, because of that, you took birth. He who was unborn took birth. Because they prayed for you. Because they are your devotees. And they had this desire that you come as their son. Therefore, to fulfill their desire, you took birth. So this is another reason. And just tvamasya chemayo vidaya cha sura dvisham. Sura dvisham, dvisha means envious. And sura means of what? Sura means the godly, we'll say, like the devatas, the demigods. So those who are dvisha, envious of the demigods, vidaya means to destroy them for the purpose of killing them, the miscreants, those who are envious of the devatas, or the good souls, or the devotees, and to do good. Semaya means do good. That you've taken birth. So this is the third reason. You've taken your birth to to destroy the impious and to elevate and protect those who are pious. That's why you've come. Because Devaki and Vasudev prayed for you. That's the third one. The first reason was? That was in the other class. That was the second reason, not to purify, but to make Yadu famous. But the first reason was to glorify the pious king, such as Yudhisthira. And here, the third reason is because Vasudeva and Devaki, the Supreme Lord, this is so wonderful. The Supreme Lord comes, the unlimited, all-powerful, all-attractive. We can't even conceive of what unlimited and all unlimitedly powerful means, or unlimitedly beautiful, or unlimitedly wealthy and knowledgeable. But he comes because his devotees want him to come. So it shows all these reasons show the power of devotion. Devotion controls the Supreme Lord. And then, yada yada hidamasya. You know that verse? Yada yada hidamasya. Who knows that verse?
I know.
Yes, please.
Yada yada hidamasya jani bhavati bharata akya jana madharmasya tatat mana sujamam.
Very good. Only if I had a sweet to give you. But you also get one too. And you also get one too. And we lost one. But he also gets one. And you also get one. Because you eat dirt. Actually, there was one time when we used to go to Gokul, where Krishna was famous for eating dirt. Everyone said that the sand tastes a little sweet there. Do you remember that, Zaktrini?
Yeah.
The people say that. And then they'd give you laddus made out of sand. and you'd eat them. And it would taste sweet. I think they put sugar in it. I think personally. But does the dirt taste sweet, actually? Zaktrini, do you?
Yes. Right,
yeah?
Yes.
Sweet. Yeah. Raise your hand if you've eaten the dust of Gokul. Okay. Does it eat sweet? Does it taste sweet? Yes. You just eat the wrong dirt. Have you eaten the dust of Gokul yet? You should go to Gokul. Have you been to Vrindavan?
Yes.
Have you been to Gokul?
No.
Well, when you go, make sure this little. Have you? Did it taste sweet to you?
I don't remember it tasting sweet, but it's very blissful.
That's very sweet. In the time? Then, yeah. Did you eat any?
No.
Why? Your father didn't bring you?
I went to Gokul, but I didn't.
Next time. You were too young before. Who else? Did it taste sweet to you?
I can't remember.
A safe answer.
I can't remember.
Very sweet.
Very sweet. You haven't been. Have you been? I do remember it tasting sweet. But everything in Vrindavan is sweet. Here is the translation. Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn. Yet, you take your birth for their welfare and kill those who are envious of the demons. Envious of the demigods. This is a very short purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is also said that Vasudeva and Devaki, in their previous birth as Sutapa and Prishni, underwent a severe type of penance to get the Lord as their son. And as a result of such austerities, the Lord appeared as their son. It is already declared in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord appears for the welfare of all people of the world and to vanquish the asuras, or the materialistic atheists. Okay, next verse. Because there's a reason I wanted to do two, especially, but it's maybe too late almost. Because there's so many different opinions about everything. There's so many different opinions. But now, in the next verse, and the next, really, the two verses, the actual opinion will be given of why Krishna came, and it's, of course, yeah. Would you like to hear the actual reason? Then come tomorrow. I tricked you with that. You fell right into my trap. Thank you. So, okay.
Bara avataranaya ranyanye bhuvanava ivodadao sadyantya bhuri varena dhato yatma bhuvartitaha.
Bara vataranaya anye, to reduce the burden of the world, and anye means others. Others say that you have come to reduce the burden of the world, because bhuvo nava ivo dadao, because the world is aggrieved. Nava means boat here. Ivo dadao, like a boat on the sea in a storm. The boat undergoes so much turbulence, going this way and pushed that way. Has anyone ever been on a boat during a storm? What was it like?
It's terrible. It's
a
bad seasickness.
What do you feel when you're on it? I mean, sick, yeah.
What's your feeling? Feeling really sick with that, really sick.
Yeah, but okay, what's the experience? You're getting tossed this way and pushed this way. I went from Hong Kong, from Japan to Hong Kong. From Japan to Okinawa, and from Okinawa to Taiwan on a little boat. And it's quite interesting in the sense. I didn't get seasick like you did because it wasn't a storm. But you're going this way and that way and this way. And the ocean is so big and you feel so small on it. And it's quite precarious. What does precarious mean? Excuse me?
Dangerous,
yes. Very dangerous. You feel like you're in a very dangerous situation, because if the ocean swells up in some way, it just knocked over, and then you're in the middle of the ocean, and you're going to drown. And then after a while, you get used to it, and you forget that you're in a dangerous position. But you are. This way and that way. So in a storm, the ocean is pushing one dangerously back and forth, and one feels very insecure. I've been in Christchurch, New Zealand, when there were earthquakes, and the thing that you take for granted, you don't even think about it, that the earth below you is solid. When you take a step, you don't think it's going to start shaking and then disappear on you. You couldn't exist, practically speaking. So when you're in a situation where there's an earthquake, it's so disturbing, because the very earth that you walk on starts trembling and moving back and forth. And it's the last thing you expect to happen, and you feel very, very frightened. So when the world being overburdened, the world was overburdened like a boat at sea. And that Brahma, and others say this, Anye, others say that when the earth was overburdened like a boat at sea, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared to diminish the trouble of the world. So this is also described in a little more detail in the 10th canto, right in the beginning of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna's advent is described, and why Krishna comes. It describes there how Bhumi Devi, who is the earth, she took what form?
The
form of a cow. Why did she take the form of a cow? To approach Lord Brahma to ask for help, because she was feeling the overburden, by the unnecessary demonic forces in the world. Because at that time, Kamsa, Jarasandha, there were so many, Shishupala, there were so many countless, practically speaking, demonic, powerful demons in the world. And they were very powerful, very powerful. And the earth herself was feeling troubled by this, deeply troubled. So she went in the form of a cow to Lord Brahma to request him to pray for the avatar of the Lord to come, because when the Lord comes, he removes the burden of the earth, gets rid of the asura-dusha, those who are envious, asura-dusha, envious of the devatas. So why did she take the form of a cow? I could only, if I had that video right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you tomorrow, if you come, I'll show you a video that will make this so clear that I took in Vrindavan of two calves, and then you'll understand why really clearly. Have you seen that video? Mm-hmm. Okay. I took it myself on camera. Because a cow, when you see a cow, if you have any piety to you, your heart becomes soft. Because Krishna even, he loves the cows. It's called Krishna Goraksham, the Vaishya community. They protect the cows because cows are so, they're so innocent. They eat grass, and some of us may eat dirt, but none of us eat grass.
I do.
Most of us don't eat. Some of us eat dirt, and most of us don't eat grass. We do, actually. And do you drink wheatgrass or something like that? What do you do? What kind of grass do you eat?
You know, in my
pool,
I just pick up grass and eat it.
Does it taste sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah? Nice. In Mayapur, everything tastes sweet. And the cows take that and turn it into milk. And they're very, very gentle. Generally. Sometimes they're quite bad-tempered, too. That's true. You have a story to tell us about this? Is it a long story or a short story?
Short story.
A very short story?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
I read in the Journey Home that once, when Radha Maharaj was in India, a really angry bull almost trampled him. But someone from there, from the village there, stopped the bull. Mm. Otherwise, he would have probably attacked him. And I think actually he did. He did it once.
No, I hope not. I sincerely hope not. But bulls are different than cows. They're in the same, because bulls, anyway, it's a long story. But cows are more gentle. But sometimes they're in bad mood also.
But in any case,
but I will, tomorrow we will show this video that will melt your heart so much. When you see these, what's a baby cow called?
Calf.
Yes. And what's this part of your leg called? That's very confusing, isn't it? English is a confusing language. So, to make Brahma's heart soft, when the cow is complaining of difficulty, Brahma naturally, Brahma means the greatest, the great one, and the original Brahmana. So naturally he wanted to protect the cow who was in difficulty and remove the cause of her difficulty. So Brahma prayed with all the devatas, including Lord Shiva. They went to the ocean, Swetadeep, where there is an ocean of milk, and Brahma went into very deep meditation and prayed to the Lord, and then there was a voice that only he could hear, and Brahma explained what that voice said, and that voice said that, yes, I am already aware of this difficulty, and I am coming, speaking on behalf of Krishna, actually. I am coming. So
all of you, the devatas and the wives of the devatas, they should take birth on earth to assist in my pastimes when I am there. So some say that the reason why Krishna took birth was because of Brahma's praying for Krishna to take birth on behalf of Bhumi Devi. So many reasons, and they're all true. They're all true. But there's another reason why Krishna takes birth. Because here, in these reasons, he's taking birth because his devotees are requesting him to take birth. But tomorrow's reason will be on a different level that will describe that. But let's read a little of this purport of Prabhupada's review in this 34th verse. Within the halo of the universe, the glow of the universe, within the universe, there is a transcendental planet known as Svetadip, which is the abode of Chiradaksha Vishnu, the Paramatma feature of the Supreme Lord. There are three super souls. Did you know that? This is how our acharyas describe it. One super soul is known as Mahavishnu or Karanadaksha Vishnu, who is the super soul of the entirety of the material existence. And from him, universes come from his skin pores. Then a second super soul is known as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and he's the super soul of the universe. And the third super soul is this Chiradaksha Vishnu, who is the super soul who lives in everyone's heart. So three super souls. How many super souls are there?
Three.
Could you name them? Can you name any of them? Okay, I am a very poor teacher, so I will repeat it again.
Karanadaksha Vishnu.
Okay. Karanadaksha Vishnu is a super soul of? Karanadaksha Vishnu is a super soul of. In other words, the super soul gives life. Why? That, like the soul gives life to the body, the super soul gives life to, if he's the super soul of the individuals, he gives life to the soul, which gives life to the body. And then there is the super soul, or the Paramatma, Supreme Soul, who gives life to the universe, and he is known as, one more, up, Garbhadaksha Vishnu. He gives life to the universe, because he enters the womb, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, he enters the womb of the universe and gives life to it. Garbha means womb. And then the third one is the super soul of all existence, the Paramatma of all existence, who is known as Karanadaksha Vishnu. And from him, he's so powerful that universes come from the pores of his skin in seed form. So three, Paramatma. Did you know that? This is one way of describing it. Srila Jiva Goswami describes it in this way. So, Chiradaksha Vishnu is the Paramatma feature of the Lord. Whenever there is trouble in the universe that cannot be solved by the administrative demigods, they approach Brahmaji for a solution. And if it is not to be solved even by Brahmaji, then Brahmaji consults and prays to the Chiradaksha Vishnu for an incarnation and solution to the problems. Such a problem arose when Kamsa and others were ruling over the earth, and the earth became too much overburdened by the misdeeds of the Asuras. Brahmaji, along with other demigods, prayed at the shore of the Chiradak ocean, and they were advised of the descent of Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So some people say that the Lord appeared because of the prayers of Brahmaji. We could take a vote, like the politicians do, to get the opinions of all the people before they make their policy. In other words, their policies don't come from really what they believe. They come from what they think will get them votes. But aside from that, like, we could ask, how many of you think that the Lord came to satisfy Brahma's prayers, or to glorify Yadu, or to... We could do that, but we won't. So we won't even talk about it, because it's already after 8. Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Paul.
Harishan, you mentioned about Maya and materialistic desires.
Yes.
So I remember vaguely reading in the Bhagavad Gita about how the senses can be held in check through bhakti.
Yes.
And I vaguely remember also reading something about how they can't be artificially stopped or something. Is that right?
We'll just continue with the question.
Yeah, so, like in my experience, I felt that material desires can be suppressed with the help of material things as well, not just bhakti.
Like chocolate or something? What do you mean?
Well, I'll give an example of what someone else once said. Like he was a soldier and he worked in the army and he had to be a watchman and he took all these different medicines, one for stopping digestion, one for stopping desires, etc., because he has to be a watchman or something, you know, to do. So can desires be stopped from medicine, for example?
Well, you could also stop your desires by dying, which is what medicine basically is, kind of medicine, like an anesthetic. It poisons you. It's like taking poison. So you could, it's one way to stop desires, by dying. And that's more or less the only way of stopping desires in the mind from jumping all over the place, or something like that. So that you could say that's a solution, but one is it's not a positive solution. It's not a practical solution. But I'm not sure if I'm really answering the heart of your question. Can you stop your material?
Can it help?
Well, Prabhupada once said, as far as we have heard, I didn't hear it directly, but sense enjoyment is like salt. If you put too much in, it's not good, or if you take too little, it's not good. In other words, because if we have too little, then as soon as a sense object is in front of us, it may overpower our self-control of the mind. But maybe that doesn't really get to you, what you're asking, either. So the point of bhakti, the senses need engagement. That's the point of bhakti. And you can't stop them from being engaged. And if you try to do it through withdrawing them completely through processes like yoga, what pratyahara means, to withdraw the senses, first control the mind through pranayama, and then you withdraw the senses and keep them in, you're in a very precarious, very dangerous position. Because as soon as you see a sense object, then the senses will tend to go out and meditate on them, focus on them very, very strongly. Example of Subhari Muni. So, but bhakti has a completely different approach, not to stop using the senses, but to think of the senses as the property of service, that they're meant to be used in Krishna service, which is more accurate. So, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Vishate, that the senses should be used in the service of the master of the senses. So why bhakti is considered easier and more effective is because the senses don't have to be stopped, but you can use them. You can use them. You must use them, but they should be used in the service of Krishna. Did that sort of answer your question? Okay. Okay, one last question. Yes.
In reading great devotees in the Bhagavatam, is there any specific reason why Krishna wanted to appear in Yadu's dynasty?
Well, Yadu was especially a great devotee. Must be. But Krishna ultimately, Krishna comes and does what he does because he wants to do what he does, and he does it. We want to do what we do, but we can't do what we want. We end up doing what everyone else wants, and whatever, this and that, and this and that. But Krishna does just what he wants. So when he chooses one devotee because of his special love for that devotee, because of just the rest of the special relationship, then it's just glorious. Like another example on that, sort of on that level, is it describes in the third canto of the Bhagavatam that Uddhava told Vidura that when Krishna was leaving this world, he thought about him specifically. You read that?
Yeah.
So there are so many great devotees in this world, but he thought of Vidura when he was leaving. So if we don't look at it, that why, you know, like everyone is, you know, the greatest is like this, and the great one is more great is like that, and then Krishna should only deal with the topmost of greatest, you know, the only. But if we just look at, just think of what Vidura, how his heart must have just melted in love for Krishna when Uddhava told him that Krishna was specifically thinking of him and remembering him. and what ecstasy, and how Uddhava's, the ocean of Uddhava's love for Krishna must have overflowed so much, and just look at it from more that point of view, from a strictly analytical point of view. Why did he choose him? Why didn't he remember Sridham, Sudham, or Stoka Krishna, or Mother Yashoda, or Kunti Devi, or so many devotees, Arjuna, or Uddhava, or even the Braja Gopikas? So he is Swatantra. He is the only one who is actually independent and who does what he wants. But even he doesn't do what he wants. He does what his devotees want. But he reciprocates with them in such a way that he causes their love for him to overflow. Overflood and overflow. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Good night. And Krishna willing, we shall see you tomorrow, because we have many surprises in store for you. Will you be able to come tomorrow, or are you busy? Huh? You have to check your
diary.
I was thinking of, I don't know what programs they use on mobile phones nowadays. We used to say daytimers, and I almost said that, but that's so, as they would say, so 70s. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Kunti Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Srila Gopinath ki jai. Hare Krishna.